time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Jonathan Jones reporting. U.S. stocks saw their single largest single-day drop Monday after the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged nearly 1,200 points. Monday's Dow sell-off, the biggest point decline in history, comes after Friday's slide when the Dow lost 666 points. The stock market has now lost about $1 trillion in value since Friday. An eruption of ethnic violence in northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo has killed more than 24 people and left hundreds of homes burned to the ground. Congolese officials say the fighting exploded late last week in the Ituri province between Hema and Lendu ethnic groups. It's unclear what set off the fighting, but the two groups have been bitter enemies for decades. The UN peacekeeping mission in the DRC says it will assess the situation. The White House is now in charge of a Democratic rebuttal to a Republican memo alleging FBI abuses of power during a probe into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. In a unanimous bipartisan vote, members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence agreed Monday to release a report showing a dissenting view of the approach used to obtain a government surveillance warrant on Carter Page, a former Trump campaign advisor accused of contacts with Russia. Poland has canceled Israeli Education Minister Naftali Bennett's visit this week because of Bennett's strong reaction to Poland's proposed Holocaust law. On Monday, Bennett said the blood of Polish Jews cries from the ground and no law will silence it. This is VOA News. Salah Abdeslam, the top surviving suspect of the November 2015 terrorist attacks in Paris, stayed mostly silent during a much-awaited trial appearance in Brussels on Monday. Correspondent Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from Paris.
Salah Abdeslam quickly shattered any hopes he might finally talk about his role in the 2015 Paris attacks, the deadliest in recent French history. Bearded, long-haired, and clad in a white polo, Abdeslam arrived under tight security at the main courthouse in Brussels. He first refused to stand or answer questions, but then claimed Muslims were unfairly judged and said he would only respond to Allah. If found guilty, Abdeslam and fellow defendant, Tunisian Sofiane Ayari, face up to 40 years in prison for attempted murder in a shootout with Belgian police. The incident took place in March 2016, 4 months after the Paris attacks that killed 130 people, and just before Abdeslam was arrested in the Brussels Molenbeek district where he grew up. Days later came the attacks in the Belgian capital and airport that killed more than 30 people. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Hours after the country's president declared a state of emergency, security forces in the Maldives forced their way into the Supreme Court building and early on Tuesday arrested the Chief Justice. Police said they arrested him and another Supreme Court judge for an ongoing investigation, but they gave no details about the allegations or charges against the two judges. Also on Monday, security forces arrested the former president of Maldives. South Sudan has recalled its ambassador to the United States after the Trump administration unilaterally imposed arms restrictions on the government last week. First Vice President said the U.S. move will negatively impact efforts to peacefully resolve the conflict in his country. And the U.N. Security Council met to discuss Syria Monday amid new reports of possible chemical weapons use in that country. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley told the Security Council, "We have reports that the Assad regime has used chlorine gas against its people multiple times in recent weeks, including just yesterday. There is obvious evidence from dozens of victims." Medical groups in Syria reported several civilians had signs consistent with chlorine gas, including breathing problems and the smell of chlorine on their clothes. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world around the clock at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Jonathan Jones reporting from the world headquarters of the Voice of America in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bati in Washington. Today's Tuesday, February 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military says it rescued 30,000 hostages over the last 2 years from Boko Haram captivity.
With the help of the Nigerian Air Force, the Nigerian Army, we've been able to secure the headquarters of the Boko Haram sect in the Sambisa Forest. Most of their camps have been destroyed. As I speak to you, my troops are presently occupying the whole of the Sambisa Forest.
Major General Rogers Ibe Nukelas is theater commander of Operation Lafia Dole. Cameroon opposition leader calls on President Paul Biya to resolve the ongoing violence in the country's English-speaking regions. And South Sudan recalls its ambassador to the United States over U.S. sanctions.
We shall not collapse because of their sanction, because our friends are there. Americans wanted to impose this arms embargo through the U.N., but it is because Russia has refused. It is because China has refused. Our partners in oil are Chinese, are not American.
Taban Dengai, South Sudan's first vice president. The European Union trains Interpol members to combat organized crimes in Africa. Burundi commemorates 27 years of the signing of its national unity charter. And UNICEF uses drones to fight cholera in Malawi. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military says it rescued 30,000 hostages over the last 2 years from Boko Haram captivity during an offensive it dubbed Operation Lafia Dole. Speaking Monday in the northeastern city of Maiduguri, Defense Minister Masoud Den Ali said the military has made significant gains in degrading Boko Haram. He said no Nigerian territory was now under the control of the insurgents. Major General Rogers Ibe Nukelas, theater commander of Operation Lafia Dole, says the military has been able to secure the headquarters of Boko Haram in the Sambisa forest. He says while the military has not been able to rescue all of the Chibok girls taken captive nearly 4 years ago, it continues to rescue more civilians held against their will or those defecting from Boko Haram.
Over the years and the intensity of the various operations we are conducting, over 30,000 people have been rescued. That is the truth about it. And we continue to rescue more civilians that are either held against their will or those that have repented from the Boko Haram sect.
But what about those girls? Have you been able to recover all of the girls that were taken?
No, we are on it. We have been able to recover some of the girls. We are still on it. Hopefully, we'll be able to get most of the girls out soon.
What does this mean in terms of the Nigerian army's fight against Boko Haram? Are you making progress?
Yeah, we're making very serious progress. As I speak to you, the headquarters of the Boko Haram has been captured by the troops of the Operation Lafia Dole, the Nigerian Armed Force. With the help of the Nigerian Air Force, the Nigerian Army, we've been able to secure the headquarters of the Boko Haram sect in the Sambisa Forest. And most of their camps have been destroyed. As I speak to you, my troops are presently occupying the whole of the Sambisa Forest and in the enclave of the Boko Haram headquarters.
Did I read an article the other day that said there have been some casualties in terms of your bombing campaign against Boko Haram, that in the process that some civilians might have been killed?
Well, this is a war situation, and everybody in the Boko Haram is either a sympathizer of Boko Haram or one of the Boko Haram fighters. There are no civilians that have been targeted in the course of the operation because the rules of engagement and the code of conduct of operation is specified. If civilians have been killed, we won't be able to rescue this number of civilians that were still in the rescue. So we are very professional in the conduct of the operation. We are very systematic to make sure that civilians...
When President Buhari took over, he said that Boko Haram was going to be destroyed. Can we say that that is yet to happen?
No, you can categorically say that Boko Haram has been decimated. In any battle, once the headquarters of the enemy is captured, it's absurd to say that the enemy has been defeated. So you can take it on that point that Boko Haram has been defeated, disseminated completely for now. They are busy running away, running from one end of the bush to the other, so and we are following them up. We're doing up mopping up operations across the theater.
Do you think the Nigerian military could maybe celebrating too soon? Because as you know, Boko Haram as an insurgency can come back anytime and strike.
You know, in asymmetric warfare worldwide, you can't categorically say yesterday we are through the operations. The operations will continue for a while. We continue to mop up the operation and then do some stabilization operation. That's what we're doing right now. So gradually they need to take out all their camps, and then that should be able to conclude the operation.
Are you getting the necessary, equipment and maybe budgetary support to carry on this campaign?
The government has been supportive. The government has been providing necessary equipment and logistics for the operation. That's how we have achieved success.
So, General, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Major General Rogers Ibe Nicholas is theater commander of Operation Lafia Dole, an offensive being conducted by the Nigerian army against Boko Haram. You're speaking with me from Abuja. The European Union, under its project Enhancing Africa's Response to Organized Crime, or ENACT, is training members of Interpol from Uganda, Eritrea, and Sudan to combat organized international crimes. Natalie Richard Rawl, the coordinator of ENACT, says international organized crime is a threat to both regional and international security. The head of Uganda police, Kale Kayihura, also says international organized crime contributes to national insecurity and instability. Mugumi Davis Rakerins reports from Uganda's capital, Kampala.
Rusharo Boba says in order for members of Interpol to combat cross-border crime, they must be well trained and equipped with modern technology.
As part of this project, Interpol needs to develop a strong model for information exchange, cooperation and training to assist police in adopting proactive strategies to combat organized crime. To do this, we'll provide 18 training courses in criminal intelligence analysis. All African member countries will be invited to the training program.
She says organized crime threatens governance, peace and security across nations. General Kale Kayihura agrees.
When you talk about gun-related murders you had, you find they come from across our borders. And of course, drugs, I talked about drugs which intoxicate our youth, especially in urban areas, and lead them into serious crime.
Last month, a South Sudanese woman was arrested along Uganda-South Sudan border while trying to enter Uganda with different weapons and ammunition. This included 13 submachine gun magazines with 390 rounds of ammunition, grenades and 2 pistols. The weapons were labeled with South Sudanese security organs. Assistant Inspector of Police Fred Yiga, Uganda's Director of Interpol, tells VOA the most prevalent crimes include human and drug trafficking across borders.
Car theft is a thorn in our back. Human trafficking is a thorn in our back. Illicit trade in goods that are not properly licensed, this is really a thorn in our back. And human beings jumping from border to border, influencing the good communities to behave criminally.
Yiga says the only way for countries to succeed in the fight against inter-country crime is by pulling their resources together and sharing information.
Interpol is about cross-border crime, and the more nations we work with, the better. That's why they talked about the I-24-7 system. It's like an email system, but this is very complicated. You can't even break through it. To share information, communicate with each other, and be able to hunt for criminals across borders in a common way, in a given way.
According to ENACT, organized crime cost Africa more than $3.3 billion in trafficking of illegal arms, wildlife crime, and human trafficking in 2011. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 6th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations. Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi. Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. South Sudan has recalled its ambassador to the United States after the Trump administration imposed arms restrictions on the country. First, Vice President Taban Dengai says the unilateral move by the United States will negatively impact efforts to peacefully resolve the conflict. Gift Friday reports from Juba.
We have deliberated for the last 2 days and we have decided to call our ambassador from Washington. Garanding has been called to Juba. They know the meaning, diplomatically.
That is First Vice President Taban Dengai speaking at the closing of an event at Juba National Stadium, marking South Sudan's National Unity Day. Guy says the U.S. arms restrictions came as a surprise, just as government delegation was preparing to attend the second phase of the high-level revitalization forum talks, which got underway in Addis Ababa. Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Mawen Makol-Arik confirmed Ambassador Ding was recalled last Friday, but downplayed the significance of the move.
It is just for administrative issue. What we do in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, if there is anything concerning administration, the ambassador is summoned, come, we ask some questions regarding administration, and then go back. This is the final call. It's just to come and consult with us.
Guy criticized the U.S. government for imposing arms restrictions on South Sudan, saying such a decision will weaken the government and embolden the armed opposition.
We shall not collapse because of their sanction, because our friends are there. Americans wanted to impose this arms embargo through the U.N., but it is because Russia have refused. It is because China have refused. The little dollar, the few dollars we have in South Sudan today, it is from oil. Our partners in oil are Chinese, are not American.
Guy noted China and Russia have veto powers in the UN Security Council and says they will defeat U.S. efforts to impose an international arms embargo on South Sudan.
We shall complain to the Chinese and to the Russian. These are the people with veto. And actually the fact that America decided to declare unilateral arm embargo, it is because they have failed in the Security Council, because we have defeated them there. We shall continue to defeat them in the Security Council. They cannot bully the whole Africa.
Guy says he doubts IGAD will implement sanctions on South Sudan government because South Sudan is a member of the regional body. He calls China South Sudan's true friend.
It is the Chinese that will build the roads of South Sudan, not America, because they are not our partners in our economy. The partners are Chinese. The other potential partners are Russian, and Russians are building a refinery, the first refinery in South Sudan.
Guy says the Chinese and the Russians are the ones who have been defending South Sudan and will continue to stand with South Sudan during what he calls our difficulties. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Burundi has commemorated the 27th anniversary of the signing of the country's Charter of National Unity. As Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura, the celebration was marred by mixed reactions as Burundi still struggles to attain democracy.
27 years ago, in 1991, Burundi held a referendum in which voters were asked whether they were in favor or opposed to the draft Charter of the National Unity. The charter was intended to abolish ethnic discrimination and to permit the creation of a new constitution to further the country's democratization process. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza warned individuals who are dividing the country. He says there are some Burundians who went astray and that they think that they will benefit from dividing the community. The president warned them that all roads to divide Burundians are blocked and urged them to forget the past and focus to rebuild the country. A constitutional referendum was held in Burundi on 9th March 1992. It followed the 1991 referendum on the Charter of National Unity, which gave the government a mandate to draw up a new constitution. The resulting document created a presidential republic with an unlimited 5-year term for candidates. The first democratically elected president, Melchior Ndadaye, was assassinated in 1993 after just 3 months in the office. Nkengurutse Nestor is a lecturer at Burundi University.
The situation didn't improve from 1991 when we voted for the Charter of Unity, because 2 years later, 1993, the president of Burundi, Melchior Ndadaye, was killed. And again, today, the situation is no good. Hundreds of thousands of people are in exile.
Justin Zoisaba is a member of the commission in charge of truth and reconciliation.
The past years, 72, even before, there was somehow killings, massacres, but Burundians tried to be united. You see, we are following the Arusha agreement, like the army, 50-50 Hutu and the Tutsi.
Burundi has been hit by political crisis after President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to seek another term in the office, which opposition say was unconstitutional. Democracy is still a major challenge in the country, as more than 1,000 people were killed according to the United Nations, and hundreds of thousands fled the country, mainly those opposed to the current regime. Moses Javier Imana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The minority leader in Cameroon's parliament has called on President Paul Biya to resolve the ongoing violence in the country's English-speaking regions. Joseph Banazem from the main opposition Social Democratic Front, SDF, says dialogue is the only solution to the Anglophone crisis. He expressed regrets, however, that President Biya would declare war on citizens of the English-speaking regions without first giving dialogue a chance. His remarks came after a local media report that security forces killed at least 5 civilians in the Anglophone region since late last week and through the weekend. Banazem tells viewers Peter Clotty that the Cameroonian government has a responsibility to resolve the ongoing crisis.
We have from the beginning insisted on the fact that where we are now, we should never arrive where we are now, and insisted on dialogue. Making sure that people are listened to, there is exchange, communication, and we find a better way of solving problems than pushing people to where you now have killings and anti-killings and so on. It's a very, very sad situation, and we hope that the authorities take the issue some seriousness.
When you officially petition the government to try to resolve this ongoing clashes between government troops and those who want cessation, what has been the response so far from the government?
The government has so far ignored all what we have indicated to them right from the beginning of this crisis. So far, the government has been very, very indifferent and ignoring any proposals that come from anywhere. We stand a better chance of standing as intermediary between the various extreme positions you have. As you rightly say, we have never been for secession. We have always talked of coming back to the 1961 constitution, which expressed itself in federalism. So the best way out in this country is to go back to a system of federalism, which already existed for a period of 12 years before it was arbitrarily dismantled by the regime. It's unfortunate that the government is not listening to us and listening to nobody and has its unilateral way of handling issues.
So where do residents of these English-speaking Cameroonians go from here, particularly when the president has declared war on those he claimed are secessionists who wants to destabilize the country and all that? Where do they go from here?
The government should tell us, because we cannot say, because we deplore the declaration of war to its own citizens by the government, and more than 30,000 citizens who cannot stand the threats and the exactions of the army have fled the country. I hope more do not, because it's creating a situation whereby nobody can say exactly where we are going to and what will happen next.
There has been a diplomatic issue where a group of southern Cameroonians who were residing in Nigeria were forcibly brought back or extradited to Cameroon. The government has been quiet. The Nigerian government in Abuja has also been quiet. The UN criticized the move to forcibly extradite them to Cameroon. What are you doing about this, and have you made any effort to contact the government to explain this scenario?
What can we do? You are talking of the international organization, the United Nations, human rights groups requesting for and, of course, denouncing the move. And it doesn't move the government in any way. That's what I'm still insisting on, that the government acts unilaterally. It doesn't care whether the world is crumbling or people are dying. It doesn't care. So whether they want the society to completely collapse before we start building it, they are in power. They have everything it takes to solve the problem. And we are waiting for them to bring measures that will bring that will solve the problem for Cameroonians. Because on the ground, the situation is untenable, really untenable.
I understand SDF officials are going to be meeting. What is the purpose and what are you planning and what will you be discussing?
We have so many things at hand. We have a convention which is coming on the 22nd of this month. So we are putting final touches to the preparation of the convention. But the impending problems we have been dealing make it such that we cannot go for such an important national executive meeting and not talk about what is happening in the country. I believe most officials, members of parliament, mayors, and other elites are going to gather all the extractions that we have and we hear from left and right. In Kumbu, in the last 2 weeks or so, four people have been shot dead, have been killed, including a military person, a gendarme. In Kambe, a good number of them were bundled down to Bamenda, I think. In Bamenda, lots of killings. In Fundong, killings as well. In Batibo, the troops went ransacking the whole place. In Pinyin, so it is really unbelievable.
Joseph Banansem is the minority leader in Cameroon's parliament. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. A number of African countries are dealing with cholera outbreaks, including Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo. In Malawi, cholera has killed at least four people since November and sickened some 200 more. The UN Children's Fund, or UNICEF, is trying out a new high-tech approach to better target response efforts, making use of a humanitarian drone corridor established in Malawi last year. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Lilongwe.
The drone heads out. Its mission is to take images of cholera-prone high-density areas in Malawi's capital. The images become maps given to communities to formulate action plans to prevent further spread of the disease. Before this new technology, UNICEF used chalkboards to map out affected areas.
But it doesn't necessarily give the same kind of contact that people have when they see something printed out like this. And they can say, oh, that's the marketplace. Oh, and look at that rubbish, all the rubbish that's there. So they can relate to it better.
Malawi continues to register new cases of cholera. It is an infectious disease that causes severe diarrhea and can kill within hours if not treated. Cholera spreads via contaminated food and water. The Malawi government has so far put 16 of its 28 districts on cholera alert. The aerial photographic images reveal sanitation problems.
We have noted that there is open defecation in the different areas, and also there is an improved latrines in many of the areas and the unprotected water.
UNICEF says the lessons learned during this experimental drone exercise won't be restricted to Malawi.
I mean, Malawi is very fortunate that it has been the place where this new experimental drone technology has worked out, and the drone corridor has been very important. And that's another reason why I believe it will last in Malawi. But indeed, it's going to be used in other countries as well. What's being learned here will be able to be applied in other countries as well.
Meanwhile, public sensitization campaign on cholera prevention continue. And as is common, business is mixed with pleasure. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's military says it rescued 30,000 hostages over the last 2 years from Boko Haram captivity during an offensive dubbed Operation Lafia Dole. Speaking Monday in the northeastern city of Maiduguri, Defense Minister Mansour Dan Ali said the military has made significant gains in degrading Boko Haram. He said no Nigerian territory was under the control of the insurgents. Major General Rogers Ibe Nicholas, theater commander of Operation Lafia Dole, says the military has been able to secure the headquarters of Boko Haram. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. February 6th is the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. This Tuesday, February 6th on Health Chat, we will discuss the controversial practice with our guest, Lucinda Clark, author of the suspenseful literary fiction, Amy Cut for Life. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.